Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab. Your host this morning will be Miss Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. Like all our talk programs, we encourage you to call in to 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. This is a brand new program that we hope you'll definitely enjoy. And now, Radio Rehab with Lisa Seif.
Good morning, everybody. It is good to be back at Radio Rehab, where we have an opportunity to share and talk to different people and members of our community about their recovery from addictions or alcoholism and how it's affected them, their family, their job, their parenting, their whatever it is. So this show is an opportunity to share that openly with people and mainly give you an opportunity to call in and ask questions. We consider our folks that come here and share, really, they're the experts. They lived it, they breathed it, they walked it, and some of them, a lot of them, are recovering from it. So do not hesitate to call Radio Rehab if you have any questions, comments, sharings throughout this interview. The number is 424-1400. We are here to answer any questions you have. Nothing's below the belt. Well, having said that, I want to get right to introducing you to our speaker, who I have watched come into recovery and really grow. I've understood that it's very hard sometimes to come into the rooms of recovery and share openly when you were taught, don't tell anybody anything about what's going on in our home. This man opened up and is going to open up with us on Radio Rehab today. He works in the ministry. He's a reverend here. He'll tell us about that. He grew up in the movement, marched with Martin Luther King, was educated with some of the best in the movement, and I think he feels now his new civil rights issue is to help people find recovery and faith and freedom from their addiction. Judge Trockman talked at our drug court graduation last week, and he said something I thought was really profound, and it reminds me of Reverend Walter Brown. He said, a candle never loses its flame when it lights another candle. And I want to introduce Reverend Walter Brown to you, who is one of those candles that wants to keep lighting other candles and keep this flame of hope alive. So thank you for tuning in, and thank you, Walter, for coming today. How are you?
I'm fine, Lisa. How are you?
Great. Good to see you. You know, you have been clean and sober 8 years. This man still carries his chips in his pocket. You can tell he's excited about recovery. So with that, tell us about you.
Well, thank you, Lisa, for this opportunity. It is indeed a blessing to be here. And just let me say to you what a great work you're doing. I thank God for Ed Lander, this radio facility and program. And we thank God for what you have done and certainly for what you are doing for the least of these.
Thank you.
Well, my story is like so many other stories, Lisa. I grew up in a Christian home, God-fearing home, and that is just my upbringing. I kind of got a culture shock in 1953 when I moved here. My father was called to pastor a church here, New Hope Baptist Church. And I'm not sure if it was named that at the time or what, but it's known now as New Hope. And from what I heard, he did, as a young man, come here with New Hope in his philosophy, his theory, his preaching, and his teaching. We were from an area which is known as Mississippi, state of Mississippi. And I got a culture shock when I moved here. I was from an all-black environment. The only time I saw white people was when we went to town or in passing or something like that. My mother taught in the school system, so I went to school with her, sat in her class, all-black school. My father was a moderator in that district, so he presided over black churches. He was a pastor in Louisville, Mississippi, and Meridian, and he had some of the outstanding churches in those areas. And so my experience up until 8 was almost totally black. We just went downtown and so on. My father knew everybody and so on. But when I came to Evansville, integration was just starting here. And I was sent to a school called Stanley Hall. Mm-hmm. It had a population of approximately 300. Mr. Barr was the principal. But I was brought out of an all-black environment in the church, in the community. And then I was put into school, which was all white. It was 300 whites, 8 that were started at Stanley Hall. So I went through a culture shock of my life there. But of course, my parents were interested in integration and what it would do for their child, they thought, educationally. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how we were introduced to Evansville, and certainly the church, it thrived, it grew, it went through some changes, falling down of a building, burning of a building, then a collapse of rafters, and so I went through all of that with my family, with my father as a minister and leader, saying that, you know, the money was missing. He was preaching and teaching hatred and gone south with the money. That's why the church fell. Something happened. It burned, you know. And so, but as a child, you hear all of these things. And at school and in the community, when you get it, you certainly get it from other youth who got it from their parents. So this was what was being said. I grew up under these those circumstances of criticism in the community. And
not very loving.
No, not very loving. But at the same time, Lisa, I had some tremendous, the church held some very dear things for me in my development. And I adhere to many of them now.
Yeah.
And so you have some negatives and some positives, and it helps you in what you are and what, you know, what I've become and what I am today. And I thank God for all of those experiences. I wouldn't substitute any of them. No, I wouldn't.
Wow, kind of help build the character.
Well, right.
Of it
does.
The world.
It does.
The reality of the world.
The reality of the world.
A lot of egos everywhere, huh?
You
saw that very young.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The church holds and has held for my family, and not only my family, but for our people. It has been the strongest hold and institution that we've had. And that was the institution of the church, and certainly the God-ordained institution of family. And certainly families in our culture were certainly, there was a direct way of destroying them, because the institution of the family was what God initiated. He initiated it from the beginning. He knew we would need those supportive services and love. So he instituted the family before the church. You know, so they're really in the right perspective, and he knew what to do. And so others knew this also. So there was an early on when we came to this country and to this land, there was a direct movement to destroy any family, any heritage, anything like bonding that you had together. In fact, we were separated on purpose. And there's a reason for that, because the family is where you get your unity, you get your strengths.
Definitely, yes.
And when that's destroyed, you take that from a man, woman, boy, or girl. You take the family away, and in some way, some shape, fashion, or form, if a person has had a family that has not been very good, it will come out of that individual one way or another.
Sure, we
don't
see
care
that
what anybody
right.
says. That's it was God ordained, and it will forever remain.
Well, that's interesting that you say the family and the church are the spiritual foundation of
it. That's right.
So you had that.
I had
so
that.
How does somebody like you end up drinking?
Yeah.
And drugging?
Lisa, the first recollection, I had always, as a child, saw the brown baggers and guys, you know, and like that. But my first experience was my mother sent me to the dentist, a terrible a tooth infection or something like that. And it was up on Lincoln Avenue. I never will forget it. I went to the dentist. He belonged to our church. And so mom sent me on up there. I was in pain. I went up the steps, and he knew who I was. And so he had to do some work on the tooth. But he did not have any anesthesia. He had nothing. At least he gave me nothing. Wow. He gave me my first recollection of alcohol. And he gave it to me in a shot glass with a ring around, ring in the glass, and gave me a shot. And that was my first remembering that. Then he gave me another one. And something clicked in me.
That was pure ether.
Something clicked in me and said, this must be all right. I feel all right.
Took away the pain.
And he's not hurting. The tooth's not hurting. Mm-hmm. And that's my first record. See, alcohol wasn't in my household. I don't even remember my mother cooking with it. You know, wow. Now my father might have been something like that at big things where you toast and you have wine, dinner wine, something like that. You know, I might have been in those kind of settings. But alcohol and drug abuse wasn't in my household. So, but that's my first remembrance.
Strong attachment there.
That's my first remembrance. And whatever was in me kicked in. I felt okay. And here's a man of authority, here's a doctor. We put our trust in them. And that's what happens in child molestation and so on. We put our trust in the older person that's in authority.
Yes.
And it's wrong sometimes. It's backwards. And we are abused sometimes. But that's how it happened. I just knew this was okay. This is legal.
Sure. Somebody gave it to you.
It gave it to me. It took away the pain.
So your brain never forgot that.
Never forgot it. And from that point in my life on, I thought I had what I needed to get away from pain, hurt, disappointment, you know, discouragement, segregation. Racism. I thought I had it, and as I grew up where I could get it, and I did that. And that's my honest and strongest recollection of having that first one. In other words, the street sometimes, you turn out somebody, man, woman, boy, girl. I was turned out right there because it clicked with me. I liked it, there's no doubt about it. The burning and all that was subsequent. That didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. I really did.
You had that attachment.
I had that
right
attachment
away.
Right away. And
which
didn't know what I was.
Separates us from others. There was
I didn't
that.
Know what I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I went home, my mother, I showed her my, you know, my tooth. She smelled it and hit the ceiling.
That he gave you booze?
That he gave me alcohol. They could smell it on me. But he was a member of the church, and my father didn't rock the boat, neither did my mom, so nothing was said, other than they got on my case about it, you know. What are you doing, you know? And I told them.
So do you think when parents do discover that their children are using mood-altering chemicals, no matter how hard the parents get about it, if that kid has that special attachment to that experience, their parents' words won't even matter.
It doesn't faze you.
Your pain was gone, and that's all you remembered.
That's all I remembered.
Wow.
The chastisement and the my
discipline
mother
from your parents.
Yeah, again. Getting on me, and my father talking about it. But I saw who did it. And so therefore, this person was in authority to do it.
And it made you feel good.
And it made me feel good. And so I don't really believe my parents ever said anything to him. Because they went to the same dentist until another dentist came to town named Dr. King. And but anyway,
so that was
my first. That was the beginning, Lisa.
And then you continued drinking?
And then, it was long spaces in that, you know. I didn't get back to his dentist chair. I don't even know if I ever got back there. Really. As you go, your folks go up the economic thing, they give you better doctors, I guess.
better
numbing medicine. But I remembered him, and I never had any hostility or anything like that toward that dentist, doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a very
he didn't know he
remarkable
was turning you on.
Career. He didn't know.
Yeah.
And he was doing what he thought
and
best.
He probably did it to hundreds of people, but
I'm positive. And I'm sure in that whole practice there were others who might have gone for that. There were others that it never fazed them. There were others that it did what he intended it to do so that he could work on the tooth or in the, whatever. And it might have, because I understand in military and in
medicine,
they have used alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
So
as an anesthetic.
So evidently it was acceptable.
Definitely. In
you
the
know,
deep,
so
yes,
yes. Yes. So that's my honest, it wasn't anything I stole out of the, cabinet, nothing like that. And then I went on, to school and on up and on up. And then when I got to be a teenager, of course, we experimented. And I was right in there. I was the only child in my home. Whoever say whatever they want to say, I'm my mother and my father's only child.
Right.
Now, to that union, I was born. Anything else, I have no problem with it.
Yeah.
Whatsoever, but I'm my mother's only child, and
right.
To the union of Walter Brown Sr. and Johnny Ruth Brown, I'm the only child. That's what the record shows.
And they were very well known here.
So they were very well known, and I have no.
So you were partying in high school, huh?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be accepted. I was a preacher's kid, and I was. Always made an example of, so I wanted to be accepted, and I went to extreme measures to be accepted among a certain group, and drinking and smoking and things like that was a part of partying, a part of being accepted. I just didn't know.
That's so important to a
what
teenager,
isn't it? What I was doing and what lied dormant in me.
Right.
I didn't know that there was something in me that would hold to that and that would affect me for the rest of my life. And it has. Yes.
Wow. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We just have to take a minute for our sponsors. We'll be right back with Walter Brown, who's sharing candidly the story of his life and his addiction and recovery. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Wednesday, the Tom Joyner Morning Show grants another Christmas wish.
Please, 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 Mr. Joyner, I keep praying that you see my letter and grant my Christmas wish because I really need it. Tamika, gotcha. Merry Christmas.
The Christmas wish happens every Wednesday morning on the TJMS.
All you ladies out there, this announcement pertains to you, so listen up. Every 9.5 minutes, someone in the U.S. is infected with HIV. Did you know that HIV/AIDS is the leading cause of death for African-American women ages 25 to 34? Among women living with HIV/AIDS, 64% are black. HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, has no symptoms. Many women and their partners are walking around with a virus as I speak to you this minute and don't even know it. This could be you. To find the nearest testing site and your HIV status, www.9.5minutes.org. Respect yourself. Protect yourself. Test yourself. This ad is sponsored by the Vanderburgh County Health Department through a grant from the Indiana State Department of Health.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
It has to do nowadays what they call peer pressure.
Yeah.
And I think as youth, or adolescents, or teenagers growing up, we are all affected by it one way or another. And my more ways and my folk ways, my society that I grew up in, I was always taught, and I was always around older ministers and older people. Simply because just the nature of, you know,
being a preacher's
son,
yeah,
a child, right? It was taught to me that there are certain things a man ought to be able to do. One, he ought to be able to control his woman. He ought to be able to do something about his money. He ought to be able to control his alcohol. He ought to be able to control his drugs. Those were things that that were instilled in me. And Lisa, I failed at them all.
Control.
You know, control your woman. I failed at that. At women, control that. Control your money, that up, you know. On routers living, you know, life of the party, you know.
Right.
Had some
drugs and
drugs.
Alcohol. No control.
I didn't have control over that. It controlled me. Mm-hmm. Alcohol. I could not take one drink when I really got, you know, active in my addiction with it, and thought that I had found what I needed in alcohol and drugs, and I certainly didn't have control over that. And Lisa, that is why I have gone to the extremities sometimes, because I know there are those who went to the extremities with me and never gave up on me. Never gave up on me. You know, I never shall forget, and I know my father was ashamed of some of the things that I did, and that he had to stand before maybe hundreds of people on a Sunday morning, and his son was, I mean, you know, I know that had to be
hard
for my father. Mm-hmm. And my mother never gave up on me. And I've lost count on the treatment centers and this, that, and the programs.
The interventions. Hundreds.
That I've been through. Mm. I had a doctor friend, and he and I had the same problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And, you know, you don't mention name. At first, I thought this was the person that would help me. And I was sent to Our Lady of the Peace of
Louisville,
Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
My doctor sent me there.
Yes.
And the second day I was there, the first person I saw that morning in treatment was my doctor. And it flow at me.
Wow.
You know, he sent me there.
He's there.
And he and I met in the hall together.
Isn't that hey.
But anyway, that's just...
Even in his addiction, wanting you to get better.
That's just the story of my life. It happened. I love him. I loved him until death.
Mm-hmm.
And but I've had all kind of experiences. But this thing about... You to control this, to control that. You're not to talk about this. You're not to talk about that. And Lisa, that's what happens in our families with child abuse, with molestation.
Yes.
Kids don't talk about it because it's hush-hush in a family.
Right.
And it is an illness. It is a sickness that eats away. I don't care what the pleasures are of it. Mm. I don't care what that is. You know, I had pleasure in my drugs, mm-hmm. I thought.
And that was sick.
Mm. And so until I see, my mama used to tell the illness of it, what the reality really is, that's not pleasure.
No.
But I substituted it and said, yes, this is my pleasure. This is my euphoria. This is my heaven.
Mm.
This is my security blanket.
So it didn't occur to you how it was affecting the rest of the world?
No.
Because you get in that compulsive...
You get into it and you like it.
Yes. You know it's not right, but you're...
But you like it. Mm. You like it. And the more it festers and grows... It's just like my cancer, Lisa. I'm a cancer survivor.
I didn't know that.
Almost died.
From cancer.
From cancer. Lymphoma of the glands. Same thing Jackie Kennedy Onassis had.
God.
She died of lymphoma cancer.
In your recovery, you had cancer or in your addiction?
Yeah, in both.
Oh, my.
I was a cancer patient. And, of course, I said, so far I'm cancer cell free. But that wasn't as bad, and I almost died. But that wasn't as miserable as the drug addiction, my sex addiction.
Was that as bad as the drug addiction?
Yes.
Sex addiction?
Sure.
So
it's
shameful.
Addiction.
Yeah.
We cannot say, Lisa, and this is what we've been taught now, this is acceptable and that's not. Or you can get by with this addiction.
It's sort of like,
It doesn't matter if it's gambling.
Your brain doesn't
It doesn't
know
matter
the difference.
If it's sex.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's alcohol. It doesn't matter if it's drug. It doesn't matter if it's lying. It doesn't matter if it's eating.
That
it's
brain.
The same thing. It's an addiction. And people won't come around, Lisa. I get all wired up and keyed up when we try to categorize addiction.
Yeah.
And say, hey, he's not so bad. That legal drinking is legal. You can do that. You know, some sex is legal.
Yes.
You can do that. And nowadays, they don't even went to minors. It's hush-hush.
Mm-hmm.
It's taboo because it was done to the mother. It was done to the aunt. The uncle did it. The brother. So it's acceptable in a family. We don't talk about this.
Do you hear a lot about that? As
hear a lot about it. I know a lot about it.
In these families.
I know a lot about it, Lisa. It's an illness.
Yes.
It's what we call in the Bible, it's a sin. And it eats away at the core, just like my drug did.
Mm-hmm.
There is no return. A drug addict will either die from over abuse.
Yeah.
He'll either die or bottom out and seek some help, some kind of way. And people go on through life and never seek help. And it's just like the master taught, help and deliverance can be so close that we don't want to see it. We don't want to reach out for it. Because my deliverance in the rooms and in the programs, I was taught, you can't go and tell people about this. This happened to you.
Keep it out of the streets.
Keep it out of the streets.
Right.
Keep this in the house.
That's the killer.
You can't talk about that. And here I am sitting up here, preacher's kid, sitting up here with I don't know how many people around me, and I'm supposed to come around the table to me, and I'm supposed to introduce myself. Hello, my name is Walter, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I'm a sex addict.
You mean an AA or NA?
NA and NA. Yeah. You know, I'm supposed to say that.
All those people, yeah.
Yeah. And it was the same thing in church. Some things I couldn't come to say.
Right.
Because I was taught, you don't.
So it's still that way.
It's still that way, Lisa. We have not gotten to the point where we try to hit some of these things and deal with them head on. And I'm as guilty of it as anyone can possibly be.
Well, I think you hit on it. I was talking to some parents this morning that are fabulous parents, like your parents were, and have an addicted son. And it's embarrassing.
True.
What happens to the kid. And do you think parents blame themselves? Even though we know enough.
Sometimes
now,
we as parents, we blame ourselves for things that our children are going through and have done. And in some instances, Lisa, it could have been, I don't know if there's a word, perfect rearing, a perfect family, anything. I don't know if that exists.
Yeah, but I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either. But those who have done well with it, there's still some flaws in it.
Sure.
Because the book says none are righteous, save one. Mm-hmm. No one is perfect. For we have all sinned and come short of the glory. And so when we have,
you're getting called. They can call the station if they have
okay.
Some questions.
It takes us back to honesty. Mm-hmm. It takes us back to confronting and dealing with problems and hurts and all
but
of the things.
Being willing to be open about it.
Being that, willing to be open.
Do you think what's hard for a lot of African Americans
sure
coming to meetings?
It
how
sure
am I going
is.
To be open in front of all these white people about
yeah.
my stuff?
How am I going to tell that and share that?
Yeah.
And, you know, as quiet as it's kept, I still have some problems sometimes.
Sharing in the meetings.
And sharing in the meeting and just being truthful. Mm-hmm. And I have to stand before people each Sunday morning and try, and I'm supposed to be truthful, whether it hurts because it hits me first.
How do your congregants respond to your honesty? Because you're very honest about your story.
It's a paradoxical situation, Lisa. Some of my members feel he's doing a good job. Mm-hmm. Because some of my messages, and most of them are involved in some kind of way in my experiences. That's the gospel. Mm-hmm. How it has affected me. How it has delivered me. And so some of my close members. I mean, you know, even Jesus had an inner circle, mm-hmm. Peter, James, and John. Mm-hmm. So don't tell me about, Joseph was a favorite. He mm-hmm. just couldn't help it.
Right.
His father bought him a coat, made him a coat of many colors.
Yes.
The others got mad about it and sought his life.
Yeah.
But that's just life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Old
human
Bobby.
Behavior.
Look, I'm from the old school. The guy named Bobby Womack says, and that's the way life is.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
that's the things life deals you. That's the illness
so
of
some
it.
Some people just not want to hear it.
Some say, a reverend, you don't have to go back there, that you've been to jail, that you've had an addiction. Reverend, we all know that what you say about alcohol and drug addiction and sex addiction. You don't have to keep mentioning that in your sermon, Reverend. Mm-hmm. I've got some family members, guests here today. You know, you don't have to
Ooh.
Say nothing about that. You know, and
I don't want to hear today.
It chills your spirit.
You, Reverend, but yeah. don't mention it.
Yeah, it chills your spirit, you know. And so therefore,
because we still have so much stereotyping.
You see, preaching has been one of the few freedoms that the black man has actually had. The other things, in there's no freedom in finance as far as, because if you're obligated to pay somebody, you're really kind of enslaved. You just might not know it, or you're enjoying the enslavement because you got something out of it, you know. But that's the only freedom that we really have, Lisa. The rest of it is
tied
into something either acceptable or not acceptable.
But you're saying preaching.
In
you
preaching.
You have to be careful your level of
shame. You really have to be. And I have to just thank God that I am what I am. I'm a product of what I am. And I promised God, if he would continue to deliver me, and he had. My father said I had more lives than a cat, because God had given me so many chances.
That's great.
And I'm a living testimony, and I'm a living witness to what he can do. And I have to say this, Lisa. I have had not a flowery ease. My struggle with cancer was tough. Mm. It really was. I was sick unto death. But my struggle with drugs and alcohol was worse. And sex addiction, it was worse. It
hurts so many people, that addiction.
That's
definitely
right. And it was worse. And sometimes I have a hard time sharing it and telling the truth. And I have been in love with someone who's using. And it was so fearful because it put me back where I was 8 to 10 years ago.
Keeping the secrets, covering up.
And it was fearful because I felt like I did 10 years ago.
I think the family and spouse does,
you know,
feel like the addict.
Yeah, I feel like...
You feel like you're crazy.
There's something wrong
you
with...
You hadn't even used a thing.
It hadn't used a thing, but it's something wrong with me because this person that is so close to me, I know
addicted.
They're using.
Right, right.
They're addicted, and it's affecting me.
They
it's
wear
affecting
their brain.
My teaching. It's affecting my preaching. It's affecting my living. Mm-hmm. And you can't make an addict change. You can't do it to save your life. I don't care if it's your mother, father, sister, brother,
kid,
child.
Right.
You cannot do that. Mm. And I preached miracles, Lisa. I preached it.
But your own
I didn't
spouse.
Believe it, though.
Oh, that's
I
amazing.
Preached miracles.
But you didn't believe
I
it.
I didn't believe it until it happened to me.
Wow.
Because it's nothing but a miracle that I'm yet alive. I'm not supposed to be seated across this table from you, not in this farm. I'm not. It's a fact.
So that made
and
you believe.
That made me, I know I'm a miracle. I'm not here on my goodness. I'm not here on my wealth. I'm not here because of how I dress. I'm not here because I have some education. I'm not here on my background. It's nothing but grace.
Well, with that, let's take a break. Let the sponsors talk to us while you and I continue this conversation about grace, because I know our community wants to believe that miracles can happen for the people they love. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're just going to take a break. We'll be right back to talk about miracles.
Now back to the doctor.
Hey everyone, want to get what you want in life without worrying how much it costs? Well, just use my simple two-step process. Step one, go to McDonald's. Two, get what you want. It's that easy. Even you can do it, Cheryl.
Shirley.
That's the spirit, Cheryl.
It's Shirley.
Yeah.
Get a four-piece chicken McNuggets for only $1 and juicy. Four chicken McNuggets for just $1. Now that deserves a round of applause. Prices and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Now that McDonald's has any size premium roast coffee for just $1, I love coffee this much. But since you can't see me, I guess that doesn't really mean anything. So let me put it this way. I love a small cup like an astronaut loves to spacewalk. And I love a medium cup like a little girl loves... And I love a large cup like, well, like McM... loves egg. And that, my friends, is true love. You know, for $1.
striped sets, now $34.99. Great prices every day. That's the magic of Macy's. Savings off regular sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply. See store for details.
Mom, can I have dessert?
Before you answer that, think. Have they done their homework? Cleaned their room? Regrouted the bathtub? If they did, they know what's at stake. Warm, gooey banquet pies made with real fruit. Tasty peach, apple, and cherry berry. Microwavable in 4 minutes for about a buck. Good enough to get them doing the dishes and feeding the dog. So next carburetor fixed, you know what to do.
Do I smell pie?
Banquet's new fruit pies, next to the pot pies. So good for so little.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100...
OnStar emergency, I have a vehicle accident with airbag deployment at State Highway 196. I'll bring along.
Got somebody here! I'm pregnant!
Okay, we have officers on the way.
My mom can't move her leg! My mom had a slight lapse of consciousness!
See the other vehicle.
I don't know! It's over in the ditch! Oh my god, I think I'm a labor. Did I just break?
Dispatch, are you still there?
Yes, OnStar.
Mommy, you need to sit up! Mommy, you need to sit up!
We have an ambulance on the way.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
OnStar, help is on the scene.
Okay, thank you.
Crash response from OnStar, safely connecting you in ways you never thought possible. Drive on, always on, live on. Visit OnStar.com for service length, details, and system limitations.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
I'm back talking to Reverend Walter Brown. What a teacher, what a coach, what a leader. Just talking to him is inspiring. We were talking before break about miracles and about grace and how loving somebody that's addicted makes you feel addicted too. He's just incredibly experienced in every corner of this malady. And at break he was saying this is a sickness, but it does make us sin. This yes. sickness makes us sin. So back to Reverend Brown. Here we go.
Thank you, Lisa. Let me say this. I didn't choose to go to Morehouse College in Atlanta. My father said it was Dr. King's school, where Martin Luther King Jr. went, graduated maybe at age 15, 16, something like that, at that age. That's how far advanced he was. Anyway, my father chose Morehouse for me because he wanted Morehouse College to give me something probably I didn't have. And I wanted to go to Tennessee State because I had a cousin there and I know he was a partier. And I wanted to go to Nashville where I heard college students partied. But my father said to me, I never will forget, they put me on the L&N train down here by the river with a tin suitcase, footlocker they called them back there.
Right.
And my mother gave me a shoebox full of fried chicken. That's what I ate this morning for breakfast coming in here. But that's what I went to school with. And my father said to me, son, it's Morehouse or no house.
Ooh.
And that's how I got to Morehouse College. He made the choice for me because he knew a lot I didn't know.
Even, what happened to parents being that aggressive?
Even about me, he knew.
He told you where you were going.
He told me where I was going. Mm-hmm. And thank God I did get something there. Mm-hmm. I got from some things from Dr. King, even though I didn't like going to chapel in the morning. I thought I'd been to church enough all my life. Got to Morehouse, and here I am in college, got to go to chapel to hear men like Dr. King, Benjamin Elijah Mays.
Wow.
You know,
you didn't know at that time what you were getting.
I didn't know
did
what
you?
That was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, you know, Ralph Abernathy, John Lewis, all these guys passed through there. Stokely Carmichael, these guys. Listen, I was influenced in Morehouse with every movement that existed in this country.
Wow.
I had a taste of it.
Yeah.
And you make your own choices. I didn't choose the Black Panthers. I chose the student SCLC student corps, John Lewis, Dr. King Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I went the nonviolent route. I chose. I had all of those influences on me. You know, young young Jewish people from the East. I could relate to. They could relate to me. We went to jail together. We struggled together.
None of that could keep you clean and sober.
None of that could keep me clean and sober, Lisa. I didn't fall through the cracks. I just went on down to my level, and that's what it was.
Created your own cracks.
It was, I created my own, and if it didn't exist, I'd make up one, you know.
Yes.
And so, but let me get back to my bringing up. It was, in my more ways, folk ways, in my society and culture, that if you did certain things or admitted to certain things, it was a sign of weakness. It was a flaw in the family if a child abuse had occurred. You know, they didn't know Unc is sick, and we need to eradicate this sickness or something, or let this child know it's still wrong. We didn't face that, and we still don't want to face it.
Yeah.
You know, we want to rub over it, something like that. And as a result, in our addictions, they have gotten out of the position that we are. For an example, our jails, our institutions are now an industry.
Well, the jails are 50% African American.
Well, sure they are, or more.
So do you think it's some cultures are slower to accept the openness it takes to get well?
Right. And the fact is that if you in your culture, and if certain things are denied, with even children, you see certain things. A child doesn't just come up and all of a sudden he's a criminal.
No.
There are some things that attribute to that, but we won't attack or deal with the problem when it begins. We cover it up and we say, hey, it's okay, it's not gonna happen again. You are a lie, and the truth ain't in you. It is gonna happen again and again.
And they don't wanna talk about drugs.
They don't wanna talk about sex.
They don't wanna talk about alcohol.
Right. And in the pulpit, sometimes we're not supposed to preach about it and teach about it.
But you have a captive audience every week. You should talk about
it. And we are supposed to say, hey, that's a sin.
Something that happened to them.
Let's go on. Let's go around that one.
You think in your culture, it's harder to be open?
Sure it is.
That's why AA is hard.
That's why AA is hard. NA is hard.
So where can people
food go? Addiction is hard. Obesity in my culture.
Yes.
It's a compulsion.
Overeating.
Sure it is. It's an addiction.
Absolutely.
And I'm talking about something that's non-medical.
Right.
You know. Just for the
compulsive behavior. Yeah.
It's wrong.
Well, there
it
is
has to be treated.
There's a 12-step program for compulsive overeaters.
Yeah, all right.
At Stepping Stone on Saturday mornings, it's called Overeaters Anonymous.
Okay, all right.
Same 12 steps.
It works.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't want to talk down any program that works.
Right.
I know alcoholics. I know drug addicts who have overcome and who have been delivered, and they never stepped into the rooms.
Me too.
Now,
I don't know many, but I do know some.
I'm not one.
Right. Yeah, me either.
And I know I was delivered.
Yes.
You know, I know I've been set free, but I'm always afraid of me.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of the
old man that
lies dormant. The old thinking say he's just there making push-ups, getting stronger.
But when you do get weak,
that's why I carry them.
Reminders.
They're reminders. Ooh. But, you know, I don't down if a man, a woman, boy, girl is able to overcome. Mm-hmm. If they can do it, then I want to preach and teach and join arms and hands with them.
Absolutely.
And say right on.
So
but
where can
as
we
for
find
me you? And my house,
yes,
I had to, and this is, Lisa, a reason why I am pastoring a church called New Horizon.
I love that name. New
I needed horizon. A new horizon in my
From
life.
From new hope to new horizon.
From new hope
kind of
to new horizon.
It's growing, yep.
And it's growing. I was laughed at when I opened the church and started it.
Where is it?
It's at 800 Lincoln Avenue.
Okay.
And really, I preach about it sometimes when I do my series of sermons on extreme makeover.
Ooh.
Because the building and the place that we were in, it has been a restaurant. It has been a nightclub. It has been a washeria and a laundromat. And lastly,
serving people for a long time.
And lastly, it was a funeral home.
Wow.
So now in my sermons, I say, well, hey, we're no longer servicing the dead.
Wow.
We're working on the living. We're no longer serving food, physical food, but we're trying to serve spiritual food because this program, this life is spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Haphazard, it's not by accident. We are not what we are. It's a reason. It's predestined. It's a cause. And so the laundromat cleans clothes. We're working on cleaning souls, cleaning the mind, cleaning the spirit, letting people know that where you are, we have been, and that there is another way of life. Can have a new horizon. Mm-hmm. People laughed at me when I bought the building. It was condemned, yes. We had to do a lot, and I've been put on
We've
crack.
We've been restored, so
I've
why
been
not?
Put on back on drugs and alcohol and everything else. They've been that has been said about me, you know, because I might have been going with a person that was labeled a crack addict or something, and I have.
Mm-hmm. Sure, you go where they go.
I've fallen in love, you know, and thought I was back. Had to really regroup, you know. But
well,
the church,
all we'll ever get is human.
It's human, right? But the church is there because I'm convinced some of us need a new horizon in life.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be a place for the have-nots, the failures,
Walter.
The failures like me. Now, I'm not talking about my master's degree. I'm not talking about the work that I have on my doctorate. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the have-nots,
the fallen,
failures.
Wow, that's,
yeah, that's
great.
That's what I'm talking about. And Lisa,
the lost children in each of us.
The lost in each of us. And truly, I have been found.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not find myself. It was an experience, and it is greater than I.
Wow.
A power greater than I.
And now you're a candle lighting other candles.
Well,
a new horizon. When can we come hear you? When's the church?
We're there every Sunday morning.
Sundays?
But yes.
What time?
Every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. we have our morning worship. And we are striving to do some other programs that will relate to addictions at different different levels.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some things, Lisa, start at an early age.
Most things do.
And
yeah.
And we just don't deal with them.
Right.
You know, and then when we get full blown or grown, they come out in different areas, and we didn't deal with it in the beginning.
Yeah.
That's how it got to be the problem that it is today.
The tumor grew, yeah.
Yeah, the tumor grew, you know. And it's just like the cancer I had. If I didn't have surgery, if I didn't have chemotherapy, if I had not had radiation, then the cancer would have continued to grow.
You put it in remission.
Thankfully.
Mm.
Gratefully, it was put in remission.
And your addiction is today also.
And my addiction is today. Listen, I know from whence I have come. I know what I am.
And what you have to do.
I know what I have to do.
And you're giving it back.
It's a struggle, Lisa. It's not easy for me to sit across this table. I don't have to lie anymore. I don't have to live the lie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And stand before people. That's why my heart goes out to ministers like Bishop Eddie Long. I don't know if the man's guilty or innocent. That's for others to decide.
That's right.
But what my point is this, is that we all, save none, have come short mm-hmm. of the glory of a just God. We are all sinners, saved by grace. Mm-hmm. And if it were not for grace, there go I. I'd be in the condition that I was in.
Yeah, they say never say never.
Never say never. I don't say it anymore. Yeah, that I'll either. Never do this. I'll never do that. I am as afraid of that as I am.
I know.
A two-headed snake.
Yeah, never say
he
never.
He bites you from both directions.
Walter, you have
you
been
know.
Wonderful
well,
to have
thank
on.
You,
this
Lisa.
Went
thank
way
you.
Too fast.
Thank you, thank you. I'm grateful, Lisa.
Oh, it
you
shows
know what?
All over
I can't
you.
Give enough, and the reason I can't is because my father taught me one thing. He says, to whom much is given, much is required. Mm-hmm. You can cut it up. You can do whatever you want
that's
to with
so
it.
True.
And what you do that's good, my father said, these are not my words, it does not end. It's
no.
perpetual. It goes on. It's just like that opposite and equal reaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we just react to the wrong thing. In the wrong way.
And then we own it, get honest about it.
And get honest about it and deal with it. And sometimes when we do, Lisa, it's in its last stages.
And it may not be comfortable.
It's not.
But if you all want to start healing, being honest, and even if you don't, head to New Horizons this Sunday at 11 o'clock and introduce yourself to this wonderful man that's an example of leadership and love in this community. Thank you so much for your honesty, Walter.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
I hope everybody gets to meet you.
Thank you. I am most appreciative of this opportunity.
Well, thank you. Will you come back?
You know I will.
You better.
And God continue to shower you with his grace.
Oh, thank you.
Because you're doing an excellent work.
I love meeting people like you and sharing. Thank you, Radio Rehab, for tuning in. And don't forget between now and next Saturday to do the next right thing.
WEOA, Evansville, Henderson.